In our breakout and best-selling book, Looking for Angels, A Guide to Understanding and Connecting with Angels, Dr. Scott Guerin and I share how you can communicate with angels, understand signs from the universe and these celestial beings, feel at peace knowing you are always connected to Source, and much more. Get your copy today at lookingforangelsbook.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your local bookstore. And now you can even get the audio version narrated by me and Scott through Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. You are listening to A Psychic Story, a podcast that shares behind-the-scenes insights of people who lead supernatural lives among the ordinary. And I'm your host, Nicole Bigley. Join me every Wednesday as I dispel the myths behind magic and lore. Welcome to A Psychic Story. Mysticism. Our guest for this episode of A Psychic Story is a best-selling author, holistic health expert, and medical intuitive. She has over 23 years of medical intuitive experience and is on a mission to teach people how to raise their vibration and live happier, healthier lives. She has authored more than 18 books, journals, and card decks, with her latest book being Aura Alchemy, Learn to Sense Energy Fields, Interpret the Color Spectrum, and Manifest Success. It's a powerful guide for unlocking your inner radiance through aura work. This is the story of Amy Mercury. Welcome to A Psychic Story, Amy.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, well, it's been a while since I've actually talked about auras, and we haven't really dove in deep into chakras on A Psychic Story. But before we dive into those, share with us how you grew up in New England, your time spent outdoors, and then Jaguar Woman by Lynn Andrews, because that was kind of how everything spiritually started to open up more for you, if I understand that correctly.
Yeah, I grew up in New England, and from a young age, I would see what at the time I called nature sparkles outside. And I actually write about this more in depth in Aura Alchemy. And the nature sparkles were, you know, very interesting to me, but I didn't really realize at first that maybe not everybody saw those. I didn't really discuss it. Not that I couldn't, but I just didn't think it was that big of a deal. So as time went by, in sixth grade, I had a unit in science class that was about chemistry and physics, and the textbook was called Matter, Matter Everywhere. And so it began this exploration of what everything is made of, protons, neutrons, electrons, at the time. Now there's much more that we know. And when I learned about that, I was like, wait a minute, is that what I'm seeing outside? You know, I'd be outside in the yard and I would always see them there. So that kind of started me down a path of really considering from a very young age what everything was made of, and partially because of also what I was seeing energetically or, you know, clairvoyantly or whatever. So fast forward to when I was in college, I was working as a nanny, you know, working while I was in school. And there was a family of five. They were lovely. All the kids were either sleeping or at school, and they didn't have a TV. They were kind of like, you know, more crunchy at the time. Now, normal to me. But they had a huge library. So in there, I found the book Jaguar Woman by Lynn Andrews, which was marked Women's Studies. So I just started reading it because the kids were sleeping, and, you know, and I loved it. And it was all about Lynn Andrews' journey with her medicine teacher to the Yucatan and the shamanic things that happened. So it inspired me to take some classes with the Foundation for Shamanic Studies. And at that point, I was maybe 18 or 19. And then I met the person who ended up introducing me to my late medicine teacher. And she trained me as her apprentice in an oral tradition that's been passed down for many generations from her teacher, her teacher's teacher, so on and so forth. And I teach a course on that called Spirit Writing with the Grandmothers of the Seven Directions, because that's a big part of that lineage. So she trained me in that lineage, and that became a foundational basis along with some other things. So within about 5 years, I started working with clients. At the time, I would say as a multidimensional healer. Over time, that's evolved into being a medical intuitive. And here we are 23 years later, and that's what I do. I'm a medical intuitive. And then I teach other people how to be medical intuitives and other things. And I also teach shamanism.
Wow. So were you always in the spiritual community and the spiritual world and doing that as your profession? Or were you doing something else as like your day job and then eventually you morphed into this?
I was a teacher for a while at the same time. Some of that, maybe the first year or so, I was still kind of training. And I was very fortunate. My medicine teacher passed in 2019. So I had her for, you know, 20 years in my life, able to continue supporting me as I was working too with clients. So I had some overlap time where I had my teaching job, you know, in those younger years in my early 20s, nannying and things like that. But for a long time now, that's been my primary job. And then eventually some healing information was coming through me. So I had some ideas about something I wanted to write a book about. So that kind of got me on that path of authorship too.
I always love to hear how people evolved over it, but it sounds like really early on you were experiencing it as a child and then it was just kind of that book in particular that gave you the nudge of what you needed to do. I'm curious about the, when you said sparkles, how did they look? I mean, obviously I'm imagining sparkles, but, and do you still see them or?
I do still see them and much more, you know. I write about this quite a bit in the book. We know we had a well and our property is relatively suburban, rural suburban. And we used to turn the faucet on that was on the outside of the wall, like for the hose. And it would, you know, the water would come down and then we would dig all these different streams and make villages and have our Star Wars guys and G.I. Joes and whatever. I wasn't into dolls or anything. I wasn't really that kind of a kid. I was into astronomy and science and stuff, digging. So it was usually out there initially where I would see those nature sparkles, and they looked like pretty much like white to clear white sparkles. Part of what was compelling to me about them was their movement, because they were, you know, moving fast, twinkling. Subsequently, I think, you know, I used to think of it as the tiny universe. I think there are also elementals of that dirt, that soil, that water. I work a lot with elemental spirits and things like that. And even in the book, like, we talk a lot about elementals of even like subatomic particles. That's part of what we work with in the aura side of things for manifestation. The other thing that I would see when I was out there was the silhouette. I used to think of it as a silhouette around the trees and some of the plants, especially.
Like their auras.
Yeah, it's basically their auras. It's their electromagnetic fields. You know, a good time to see auras is the tween times, dusk and dawn. And sometimes it would be, especially as it was almost dinner and we were still out there playing and before, like, you know, our moms had to come in or whatever, I'd really see those. So it was also an understanding of aliveness from a young age. Like, of course, we knew trees were alive, but I could see them glowing. You know, I didn't understand it was their electromagnetic field that I was seeing, but I could see them glowing. I could feel that. So that kind of also had me feel an interconnection, which I think is a key component of psychic phenomena. Essentially, one of the things I teach, and when I teach, you know, I teach people to talk to their own spirit guides. And I do that through shamanism, spirit writing / automatic writing, different means. It's feeling that interconnection. So I think those things contributed to that, because I also felt like those sparkles were alive. You know, they were alive in the water, in the dirt, in the air. And around the plants, I would see them. You know, it was just normal to me at the time.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually a great segue into auras. I think you wrote that they're this ever-changing, colorful electromagnetic fields that surround everyone. But you also mentioned here trees and plants and everything. So please explain what they are.
Yeah, I define auras as biologically generated electromagnetic fields that surround all living things that are made up of subatomic particles called photons that comprise light and electromagnetic force. So I really go deep into the particle physics side of auras in the book. The exciting thing to me about photons, which are light, that's all they are. And you know, there are times when light is and is not visible to our eyes, depending upon the matter it's bouncing off and the spectrum of what that matter is reflecting. Because we're not seeing the photons actually, we're seeing the matter. And when we take away we're seeing both, because when we take away the photons and it's completely dark, we don't see the matter as well. So we don't see it until it is bouncing off of it. And so anyways, when we talk about electricity and electrical energy, which are two separate things, they're, if we think about an uninsulated copper wire with electricity and electrical energy flowing to it to, say, power a lamp. If that wire is uninsulated, there are two subatomic and elementary particles that are flowing through it. The electrons are flowing through the wire. The photons are flowing outside of the wire. That's what they actually do, because they're a type of particle. They're not matter. They're not matter and energy, basically, which we call fermions. They're a force or a charge, which we call bosons. So these photons, which are a type of boson, because they're a force, they flow outside of the wire. They are an electromagnetic field. They're also the light that comes from the sun, the lamp, what illuminates the matter that we see. So when we think of our aura, we have photons moving through our body all the time. They are the light that moves through dendritic synapses when we think. They're the light that powers my hands to gesture. They're the light, the electricity moving through nerve cells, muscle cells, and beyond through the body to inspire involuntary things like breathing. Almost everything in the body is a result of the movement of photons. They are also electromagnetic fields and force. So the composite of all this movement of light through the biological human, in this case, is the electromagnetic field called the aura. Same thing's true for other animals besides human animals and plants. So we go into that even more in depth in the book. We also talk about spirits of place. We talk about rocks and minerals, which people are very into. We talk about all of it.
And when you were talking, what I kept coming into my mind or my mind's eye is that scientific research and the studies of when, let's say you have a leaf or you pull a leaf off of a plant, but then they use the light and they can still see the outline of the leaf and where it was missing, or even a person's limb, you know, which I would, if a limb is missing, they can actually look at a human and see that outline energetically. And so what you're saying is it's all comprised, the photons, the neutrons, everything in that energy moving. And then there's also the physical mass that makes up our body. But then we have that energy that's emanating from us. That's that kind of force field essentially around us.
We have an electromagnetic field around us. And it's very granular in particle physics, but fields and forces are actually not energy or matter. It's kind of an interesting distinction. And it's very new. For example, when I was in school in sixth grade, we didn't know that. We didn't have that, you know, that information. I don't think we were at a stage where we were able to measure particles that were that small yet. So it's very exciting to learn about that. Yeah, that composite field is the result of movement of photons. Absolutely. I go into the leaf experiment and things like that in the book. I also go into aura photography. I do very gently and diplomatically debunk it.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I think that, and this is just me intuitively kind of tuning in. This is not me based on any sort of fact. It's just what I believe. And that is that when I'm tuning in energetically to somebody's aura, I can see the colors in my mind's eye, but they ebb and flow and it changes very, very fast, very quickly, like even in nanoseconds. So when I've seen the aura photography and everything else, when people say, well, that's my aura, your aura changes, I think. And it doesn't mean that it's always going to be that case. It just evolves. And so that's, again, my perspective. So now please debunk it a little bit for us.
Well, first of all, I agree with you that auras are mutable and constantly changing. And I think this is before we get to the photography side. Our perception of them is colored by the lens of our experience, our brain, the way that we translate the intuitive information that comes in. So when I teach shamanism and other intuitive arts, I'm very, you know, focused on teaching how do we be the most objective, clear lens possible? How do we take ourselves out of the equation as much as possible, just from an accuracy and clarity sake too? So aura photography, again, I'm not a scientist. I'm not an authority. I'm not trying to make anybody mad. Typically, there's like aura cam, things like that. What those do is they take a regular picture and they also take a biofeedback reading. And then they use the biofeedback data to, using a computer program, to generate, surmise, guess what color might go with it and print it over the photograph. That's all that ever is. So it doesn't mean it hasn't amounted to millions of hours of fun, understanding oneself, inciting self-exploration. I don't have any judgment on it, but just from a scientific standpoint, you do not photograph the aura.
Yeah, because at one point I had an aura app, and that was just for fun. I mean, I paid money or whatever, and I would take photos. It's fun, but I was like, there's no way that just with my regular old camera phone, it's taking a photo of my aura. But anyway, it was still fun to do.
Maybe someday, though, you know, I mean, if at some point, part of why that doesn't work yet is because the apparatus is closer to ocular, you know, it's similar, it's different, obviously, but photographs with lenses and things like that, we don't typically with our physical eyes. I mean, sometimes we do, and that can be psychic perception or other extrasensory perception, but with just standard ocular human apparatus, we don't see electromagnetic fields because they're a force and a charge, and they're not visible to the human eye. Now, is there an instrumentation that at some point could detect that? Probably. We're just not there yet. Part of why that is that photons, which are this electromagnetic force, have no mass. They don't have any volume. So they're not only are they light, they have no weight whatsoever. They're incredibly small. They're pretty hard to detect, except when they bounce off something that bounces them in the spectrum that our particular eyes can see.
And that's what I was going to ask you then, is then how were you seeing those auras of the trees and the plants? And you mentioned at dawn or dusk and the bounce off and partially too, and I don't know this for a fact, but you were probably not just seeing it with your eye. There was some way that you were picking up on it.
Extrasensory. Yeah. But I do think there are times when we do see things with our physical eyes. I mean, that's the amazingness of the unknowable great mystery, right? Like that happens. I've had cases too, where I see things in the pitch black, like deep in a subterranean pitch black cave. Sometimes I can see glow light and glows and things, and they're actually not there, you know? So these phenomena are probably why you have this podcast, because they're not only are they fascinating, but they make life interesting.
Yeah, I refer to it as the supernatural is just the natural not yet explained if we don't have a...
That's what it is. That's exactly what it is.
Well, I'd love to talk a little bit more about auras too, and maybe the colors and things, if that's something that you go into, or is it more about, maybe it's not color necessarily, but how it can inform us and have us understand a little bit about ourselves more.
Sure. Yeah. In the Aura Alchemy book, I take you through first how to open up those intuitive senses to perceive, and then what you might perceive. It's, you know, not only that, but you might perceive color, you know, and mutable, changeable color. I have like the longest, most extensive color chart in there. When I was writing the book, I was like, I generated a lot of it myself. And then I was like, I'm just gonna, like, the magic of Google, right? Like, Google a list of every possible name of every possible color that exists to kind of like fill in the gaps as far as what I see. I have synesthesia, which you've probably heard of. I usually try to like turn the volume down on it, or it'd be very intense. But when I perceive energy or whatever, especially for me with plants, because I'm like kind of a nature person, I'll open that stuff up when I'm out in the woods and there's not people around typically. But when I perceive, you know, an energy, there'll be an array of color information that might line up with it through the lens of my experience. Of course, I've tried to make that very objective. But then there's also other components like sounds and textures is a big thing in aura, but sounds, auditory cues. For me, there's like different tonal elements, various gradated metallic tastes. So I use a lot of that in my medical intuitive work to find the imbalance, essentially, whatever the root cause of the issue is, and then to figure what will match up to remedy it, to fix it. But in the case of like colors and the aura, I really tried to make an extensive color chart to give everybody like a really major, just expansive menu of what you might perceive, what it might mean. And it's called a medical intuitive meanings color chart. So it's really what those types of colors mean to me in an aura. And then we also talk about textures, what those mean, things like, you know, dimness, brightness, weakness, strength, fogginess, smokiness, sparkliness, kind of a crackly dry essence, damp mist, you know, all kinds of different things. I use a lot of traditional Chinese medicine in my medical intuitive work. So we look at thermal conditions in TCM. We look at damp versus dry because damp accumulation indicates ancestral karmic or other types of latency, which is like imbalance. So I talk in the book about how we can see, feel, and sense all of that in the aura as well. Then we also talk about spaciousness. So, you know, when we have a good amount of like spaciousness between the way we perceive the particles or waves in the aura, but also not too much where it's like too faint, then we're kind of in a sweet spot. And the neat thing about all elementary particles, which includes photons, the electromagnetic force, is they are particles. Simultaneously, they're waves, including but not limited to waveform functions that we can define in math, as well as actual waves. They're also infinite excitations of infinite fields. So they're all of these things at once, which is like almost hard to grasp, right? It's mind-blowing, you know? So when we, you know, keep working with opening our senses. And I really take, there's so many activities in the Aura Alchemy book, from senses opening to journeying into your aura, tuning into your aura, meditating with your aura, all the different ways you can clear your aura, all the different ways to manifest. I mean, there's just like endless activities in there, which you can read along, or if you use the audiobook, you can hear them. You know, it's great. However, I got to read the audiobook, which was fun.
That's a whole process.
Oh, is it a process? Oh man, it's great. It's like fun, but it takes some time. You know, these particles, waves, excitations of a field all at once are, they will have ideally a nice, like spacious, not overcrowded quality. So that's like, that's something I have us look at too. Texture, spatiality, color perceptions, and then also opening it up to your other perceptions. Some people are more auditory and they may hear notes, tones, sounds. Some people may smell olfactory things or even feel a taste in the mouth, experience a kinesthetic input. Some people may think something, feel an emotion. There's so many ways that we perceive extrasensory wise. So that's part of what we try to open up. And I just give you like a giant menu of what all your perceptions might mean. It's just a starting point.
I never really thought about the aura as having a sound or a smell, because that's probably where your intuitive abilities or clairs kind of kick in. And it definitely makes sense that there would also be a sound associated with that force field, essentially.
And feelings. And really also, for me, not just one. And that's part of why I turn down or off my psychic senses, especially in crowds. A, it's nosy. I don't believe in reading people without consent. I think it's unethical. And plus, why would you want to? It's too much. If I don't have that closed down, go into a crowd and it's like an overwhelming cacophony that's going to knock you over. Because it's even with one person, it's not just one color, one sound, one feeling. It's like hundreds. We're complex, multidimensional beings. Not only is everything that's happening to us just in the present moment, how we're feeling physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually there's also, for me, because I've honed the skill, which is generally a blessing as long as you've got it turned down when you're not using it. This whole backlog of ancestral and congenital energy that the person brings in, as well as karmic, you know, very like the whole microbiome, all the different types of pathogens. I can hear, smell, feel, sense.
This may be a myth, or it's not really a myth, but a question as far as like how far does our aura usually come outside of us? Because sometimes when I'm tuning into people's energy, when they come to me in sessions, it's a couple feet out. And then sometimes I feel it's so massive. And then going back to their energy, I can usually say, maybe you want to pull your energy back in because if they're feeling drained. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. That's a great question. General kind of rule of thumb is about 3 feet out in all directions around the body. But one of the things I talk about in the book, so a lot of what I share, I distinguish, okay, this part's scientific fact. And then sometimes it's my theories are really from shamanic journeying. Through shamanic journeying, one of the things, the ways that I was perceiving that is we have a relatively defined edge to the aura, and we need that from a place of energetic boundaries. But if we go down to that really subatomic level, we also have an infinite diffusion of those particles out forever. And that is really a symbol of our interconnection with everything. So yes, some people have to own their space and really define the edge. That's like one of the big things we do in the book is learning how to own your space. You own your physical space, then you own your auric space. You embody and be present and infuse yourself through that space. In doing so, that's the best psychic protection you can have as well. And so there does have to be an edge in your mind and that you feel. To a degree, there is a very, very, even more minute, infinite diffusion of particles from that point. It's playing with that. Now, someone who's like super ultra embodied attached is the other thing. It's really degrees of attachment, I think, too, to incarnation and whatever else. Somebody who's the far other end of the spectrum might be nice to feel that infinite diffusion and release some of the constriction around the edge of the aura. So it's just like everything else. Everyone is so different. Are there themes? Sure. But we're all different, which is awesome. I mean, it's been an incredible privilege for 23 years to A, work with thousands of medical intuitive clients and to B, witness many thousands of shamanic journeys through my students. Nobody's the same. Not one person. There's themes, but we're all different. So what someone needs to diffuse out and feel interconnection, others of us need to feel our edges, own our space, and be more embodied to be able to make waves and create what we want in this dimension.
Yes. No, I love all of that. And I'm feeling drawn and led now to kind of shift a little bit to chakras. We're not going to have time to talk about all the juicy stuff, but they can get your book obviously for it. But how do chakras work in particular also with our aura, if at all?
So my perspective on chakras, I've written a lot of books on chakras. Like the publishers are very big on chakras. The public's very big on chakras. The history of chakras goes back to the Vedas, the Upanishads, which were Hindu and Vedic texts from 1500 BC and even before. And in those texts and subsequently, we've had accounts of one to up to 144 chakras. So not until the Theosophical Society in the 1800s did we gravitate to this sort of seven chakra rainbow color model. So my personal experience of chakras as a medical intuitive for 23 years is they're always moving, they're always changing, they aren't fixed. Are there themes? Kind of, yeah. And I think, you know, as with many other things in human pop culture, if enough people believe a thing, then it starts to show up because they believe it or it's in the field of the, you know, collective unconscious, however you want to see it. So my personal experience of chakras is that they are energy centers. They aren't necessarily only located where the seven chakra kind of system says they are, although those are good spots for sure. But there's more, and they are always moving, always changing. And really, the main thing is about the flow of energy through the body, whether we see it as subtle body energy or we look at it as like electricity and photons. Perhaps it's a combination of both. You know, I talk in the book about telepathy particles, particles of consciousness. Like, what are these, as of now, unmeasured things? But we know they exist. We have things that tell us that they exist. Some of that is comparable to chakra energy and even meridians and Taoist and traditional Chinese medicine systems. So my view of chakras is we want them moving, energized, and perhaps not as fixed as we think they are. It depends what resonates. If the model resonates for you and it's working for you, it's helping you foster good health, that seven chakra model, that's awesome. If you're not attached to it, perhaps there's other chakras in different spaces and more dynamic movement and open possibilities available. So any and all of the above. I think everything exists and I don't have really any, everything is great as long as it's not harming anybody. And it just depends what works for people.
Yeah. When I first started with my Reiki and the healing, chakras were a big part of it. Now, Reiki doesn't necessarily obtain to chakras. I think that's that popular culture that you were talking about and everything else. And so it felt like to me when I was going through the seven chakras, I kept hearing there are more. So yeah. But then also it wasn't always exactly in the body. I was feeling it was more in the field, and sometimes it was below, sometimes it was beneath the person or above. It was, and it moved all around. But the way that I tune in and feel it is, it to me, it feels like energetic heartbeats.
Yeah, that's neat.
And like an energy center that's just, it's flowing and it's pumping and it's allowing things. So, and again, like you said, I think that it all depends on what you gravitate to and what works for you, but it's also something that doesn't have to be so prescriptive and so precise. I think that's part of it, and that you're trusting your intuition when you're tuning into these things.
And it's a nice framework to start. Like when we start with Reiki and things, when we're just getting started on our path, wherever we are in life, it's nice to have a framework. Okay, here's these places we can start. Here's these colors that do make sense with it and could be there and probably are there a lot because of the collective unconscious. And also maybe because they are, you know, it's good to have a starting point. But then as we are opening up those senses, maybe we go beyond that. Maybe we expand that and we allow ourselves to have an open mind and think differently and see what comes forward too.
And when you talk about like alignment with your chakras, is it alignment with the chakras together or your aura? Or again, are those maybe connected together if they are at all?
For me, the idea is just to have unrestricted flow. So if there's an area of density in the body that's impeding the flow of that subtle body energy as well as the photons, then if we can remove that, whether it's an ancestral density, it's a karmic density, it's a emotional, mental density, it's a thought form density, whatever it is, you know, it's physical, it's scar tissue that's restricting the flow, whatever. If there's any way we can restore that flow, then we feel and experience greater wholeness overall. And whether we apply that to like chakras and just overall energy, or we can take those same words and they actually apply in Taoism and in traditional Chinese medicine with what needs to happen with the meridians too. For me personally, at this point with my work after so many years, some of the precision of the organ meridian system in traditional Chinese medicine holds up for me with what's happening in people's bodies. I work with that, you know, as guided quite a bit, because sometimes when it gives us some indications when we use that five element system and we look at corresponding organs and what's happening in the body, it helps me, it leads me to where I need to go to find the root cause of a problem. So that might mean someone's having issues with tinnitus or hearing or something with their ears, and I end up utilizing the kidney meridian to find the problem.
And for people that aren't familiar with meridians, can you explain?
You know, in traditional Chinese medicine, which is acupuncture, Chinese herbalism, feng shui is another component of overall Taoist philosophy that is the same five element theory. Meridians are rivers of energy or light in the body. and comparable. It's a little bit more, it's definitely a more complex system than the Vedic chakra-based system, but comparably, it's evolved. So it's landed somewhere that, you know, acupuncturists and everybody kind of agrees upon, but it's also mutable. And, you know, very interestingly, the Taoist five-element system is different, but also in Vedism, it's a five-element system. And theoretically and historically, people believe part of why that is Vedism began a little bit earlier historically, but supposedly there were a lot of trade routes there. So in Vedism, instead of, we have basically our extra fifth element in Vedism is ether. And then in traditional Chinese medicine, we have the wood element in place of the air element. And then we have metal element. So we have things that are a little bit different there, but they're both five element systems. So there's some ways that we can sort of collate those. One of my previous books is called The Healing Home. And it's a book about your home, you know, so it includes feng shui, which is Taoist five element. It includes vastu, which is Vedic five element. And then it includes shamanic practices. So that's another way. That's a fun book if you're into this kind of stuff and you want to compare. You can see that I get to go into it more in there. You can see the similarities and the differences between Vedism and Taoism too.
And that's probably a good thing to understand too, not just your own personal space and your spiritual space, but then your physical space in your home and where you're at.
Absolutely, because your home is a place where you probably spend the most time. I mean, maybe not if you work a lot or do something else, but probably where you spend the most time and you sleep there and you recharge there. So it's a good place to optimize.
That's what I was going to say. It travels with you.
Yeah, same reason why I wrote Healing Home. It's a different version of it with the aura because we are human projectors. So our internal energy projects out to create our external reality. It goes through the lens of our aura. So the clearer, the cleaner, the more charged with high vibrational energy that lens is, the more we can optimize our external experience of life.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I would love in our remaining time to maybe, if you don't mind sharing one or two, maybe rituals that people can do to change the frequency of their aura. And you said to manifest their best life or anything really that you're led to share in terms of rituals with our aura so that we can maybe even feel more grounded or centered.
Sure. So the manifestation stuff, it's totally beginner level. But it's kind of complicated. So that's the first part of the Aura Alchemy book is about the anatomy and the particle physics of auras in a really fun way. So it's not meant to be intimidating. I've had a lot of people who have read it really respond to that because they say they've get to understand things that they didn't in school, basically, because I make it fun and, you know, colorful and apply it to fun stuff. My editor, when I was writing the book, had the cutest quote. She's like, "I'm not a science person, but you made science sexy." And I was like, "Yeah, that's what I want." So then the next part of the book, we have tons of meditations, aura clearing, everything. Third part of the book, we use these subatomic particles we discuss in part one for manifestation. So that one, I think primarily we'll do a bit, but we kind of have to use the book because it's sort of in-depth. But one of the things I like to do is to charge up or fill the aura with high vibrational energy because it is that lens. And in doing so, it's a really easy way to clear and clean it without like getting in and scrubbing with the grout with a toothbrush kind of thing. Instead, we can just raise its frequency and then that which is denser or lower frequency just ceases to exist in the space of high frequency. So we do it way more eloquently in the book, I will say. I'm going to do it, you know, off the cuff. So to do that, listeners, if you are not driving, if you're driving, keep your eyes open and stay alert. If you are not driving, you can close your eyes and take some deep breaths and begin to feel your body. Feel what your body's resting on. Feel the chair, the bed, the couch, whatever behind you. And just rest into that, sink into that, and feel how supportive that feels. And begin to bring your attention to the bottoms of your feet and then kind of just gently, easily, without a lot of effort, allow it to travel up around the edges of the body and through the body, just becoming aware of your feet, your legs, your hips, your torso, your shoulders, your hands and arms, your neck and throat, and your head. So you feel the totality of your physical body. And now expand your awareness out 3 feet in all directions. Reach your awareness out and feel those edges, those perceived edges of your aura. And this is a good time to notice if anything comes to you around whether the aura has a real defined edge or not. Do you need to own your space more? Do you need more of a boundary there? Does it feel good? Or do you need to reach out more and diffuse it a little bit? So just no judgment, just allow that to happen. You don't have to do anything. Simply through noticing, it will happen. And now we're going to infuse the aura and the body with joy, the highest vibration in the known universe. And it's very easy to do. We're going to be repeating the word joy. You can repeat it internally or aloud with me in a moment. As we do that, you're going to feel it build. It's going to come up from beneath you and up through the room like a sheet of white light, like a layer of white light, except it's never ending. It just keeps coming, rising up through the room, filling you, your aura, wherever you are, the house, the car, with that white light. And it's white sparkling light. Maybe it's white with gold sparkles. It's very high vibrational joy. So now simply repeat the word joy after me. You can do that out loud if you're by yourself. You can do it in your mind if you want. Joy, 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 joy. Keep repeating it in your mind. Feel that white light, that joy energy rising up through you, elevating the frequency in the space. Joy, 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 joy. You can keep repeating that and keep feeling that. And as it winds down, you can bring your awareness back. And joy is a fantastic mantra to utilize. I sometimes use it like walking in the woods. I just repeat it in my mind, especially if your mind is running or you're thinking too much and you realize it's not a productive thing to do and you want to just focus on something singular until you can calm your mind. Joy is a great, great way to do that too. How did that feel? Did you feel that coming up?
I definitely felt that. I was feeling it expansive outwards. And also at one point in my mind's eye, well, not mind's eye, sorry, my actual physical eye, I could see like some light and some sparkles, which was really cool to have that come through.
I think it's a great thing to infuse your house with, so you can be repeating it out loud in the house. There's also a song, it's called Alegria by Kirsty MacColl. It's on an album called Tropical Brainstorm. And it's kind of like a short, it's a little dance techno-y, so it's not like a nighttime song, but it towards the end, it keeps repeating, Alegria, Alegria, happiness and joy. And it's very upbeat. So I feel like it raises the frequency in the room, in the space, in the car. It's a great way to reset your energy. You can also just say the words like we did, but if you want to turn something on to really elevate the space, it's a nice song for that.
Yes. I love it. I love all of that. Well, thank you so much for walking us through it. And I can see where, having done my own audiobook too, where the print is nice because you can take notes, you can refer back to things, but the audio, when you have all those meditations and other exercises, are good because just like that, you can literally listen and follow and be present versus having to read it and do that. Well, I've enjoyed our time together. How would you like people to reach you?
They can reach me on my website, amyleemercree.com, and it's L-E-I-G-H, mercree.com. Amy Lee Mercree is also my Instagram, so you can follow me on Instagram and see what I'm up to. You can come to the website and learn about all the things, and I would be so excited to hear from you.
Yeah. And I also love how you've included everything in the book where, I mean, I like a good book where it's dense and you can go through everything. So I definitely can't wait. I made my way halfway through. I think when we booked this, your book hadn't come out yet. So I was trying to furiously finish in advance of this, but that's a lot. It's a lot to make sure that you're taking the time with it for sure. So I just wanted to say thank you again. And I will include all of this in the show notes for people. So thank you again, Amy.
Thank you. It was so nice to chat.
Thank you for listening to A Psychic Story. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode and join the conversation on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. All episodes are free on your favorite podcast player or at apsychicstory.com. Have a question? Is there a topic you'd like to hear more about? Or have a suggestion for a future guest? Send an email to contact@apsychicstory.com or leave a voicemail message at 1-800-880-880. 1881. We'd love to hear from you, and you may even be featured on a future episode. If you're interested in booking a session with me, you can do that directly on the website. And if you want to hear even more content hosted by yours truly, check out my other show, Supernatural Matters. Reminder that you are automatically entered to win either a free 20-minute intuitive or energy healing session with me if you leave 5 stars along with a positive review. Currently, reviews can be left on Apple, Stitcher, Podchaser, or CastBox podcast players. Don't forget to email contact@apsychicstory.com when you do, because it allows me to get in touch with you if your name is pulled in the drawing. Your name stays in until you win.